So Jason went through the topic of BRAF mutant disease. I'm going to ask him to make a comment, some comments on a couple of the slides he shows, just to get you interested to go and see the actual talk. But Jason, before you begin, I'm just going to say there's a case that just came in the chat room. I just want you to think about, and maybe we'll talk about it later. 38-year-old woman with diffuse metastatic BRAF, V600 positive disease, liver, bone, peritoneal mets, but not brain. On encorafenib, binimetinib with, quote, an incredible response 3 months out. Any role to add pembrolizumab and nivolumab? So we won't answer that yet, but just kind of keep that question in the back of your mind, a great question. Can you talk a little bit about what we've learned about the biology of BRAF root mutant disease, Jason?
Absolutely. And so understanding this pathway, the mitogen-activated protein kinase or MAPK pathway, is really important in understanding the use of targeted inhibitors for melanoma and several other diseases as well. And on the left-hand side, what you can see is physiologic signaling of a receptor tyrosine kinase that can search for signals outside the cell and send that message down through this canonical pathway of RAS, RAF, MEK, and ERK, down to the nucleus to drive signaling. And about 50% of melanomas have a mutation in BRAF specifically that uncouples BRAF from the upstream regulation and leads to constitutive signaling down through this pathway, and then melanoma growth in the conjunction with other genomic changes. And so the first identification was was a BRAF inhibitor, and subsequently had the addition of a MEK inhibitor to show that that would increase the benefit and decrease toxicity.
Any comments on this slide? I got to say that half the time when I see slides like this, I'm hoping other people understand it. But Jason, maybe you can take a shot at explaining it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the animations here help a little bit, but the idea is on the left-hand side, you can see the TCGA genomic plot describing the mutations between different subsets of melanoma. And in purple, you can see the group that have BRAF mutations. You can see moving to the right on the left-hand figure, but moving towards the right, you see the three other boxes, and those include the tumors that are RAS mutant. So on the right-hand side, just above BRAF, you see NRAS, and then the group that are NF1 mutant. And again, on the figure on the right, you see NF1 as a regulator of RAS upstream of BRAF, and then the fourth group, which we call the triple wild type group, which includes kind of the clump of everything else that you see on that slide. And so these are the four sort of groups of genomic groups in melanoma that we think about, but the big one being BRAF, because we have targeted inhibition that's a standard of care in that space.
So before Jason goes on, Mike, just kind of curious where NRAS stands. We had seen some trials trying to target that. It kind of seems like it hadn't developed. Any thoughts about NRAS, Mike?
Sure. So first of all, you'll notice in that figure that they're non-overlapping groups. So the tumors that are BRAF mutant do not typically have an NRAS mutant mutation. And similarly, if you have an NRAS mutation, you typically don't have a BRAF mutation. There have been efforts to target the MAP kinase pathway with downstream with MEK inhibitors in NRAS mutant melanoma, and those have shown some effect, but really not that much better than what we would see or used to seeing with chemotherapy. NRAS mutant melanomas do respond to immune therapy, and in some situations and studies may actually do better than the typical tumor in terms of responding to checkpoint inhibitor immune therapy. But we need to look at other types of ways of blocking that pathway, such as ERK inhibitors or combinations of MEK inhibitors with other type of drugs to come up with a better targeted therapy for the NRAS mutant melanomas.
So Jason, back to your talk, you showed this slide looking at what we see clinically in trials of BRAF and MEK inhibitors.
Yeah, so I like to include this slide because I think it just gives you a visual, and it's sort of like the case actually that came from the discussion already of what we expect when we start these drugs. And so on the top is a waterfall plot with individual patients either increase or decrease in their overall tumor burden. And you can see that the vast majority of patients are going to have shrinkage of their tumor. And in fact, most of them are going to have major shrinkage of their tumor. And that's highlighted by the PET imaging on the bottom, where you can see patients even with very large volume disease who will have an initial major response to BRAF inhibition. The question then becomes the durability, and the results have led to an improvement in overall survival. So there are three different combinations that are now available in standard practice. So dabrafenib, trametinib, vemurafenib, cobimetinib, and encorafenib and binimetinib. All oral medications given in different dosing regimens in terms of the numbers of pills, but also with slightly different side effect profiles to be cognizant of. So dabrafenib and trametinib was the first approved, and really the major toxicity to be cognizant there is the one at the top with pyrexia or fevers. And we really, I educate basically all my patients to expect they're going to get a fever if we start them on that medicine, those two medicines. It isn't necessarily the case that that's intolerable, but we want to know about it sooner than later, because if we interrupt the treatment, often that will resolve and we can restart. The other two combinations have different sorts of side effects to be aware of. The VEM-COBI, as we describe it, can cause some increased rash or skin toxicity, as well as some GI upset. And then the third combination with encorafenib binimetinib, or encobini sometimes, I think is probably the best tolerated of the three. And there we can see similar toxicity to the others, albeit with lower frequency or at least less intensity. So all three are available, and probably just being aware of how to manage the toxicity that one might see with each of these is important, and make sure that your supportive staff also can educate the patient, because there are different considerations around numbers of pills and whether or not you have to fast before you take the drugs or refrigerate the drugs, and all of these things are important when patients might choose which regimen to pursue.
So, Georgina, maybe you could comment a little bit about your experience with tolerability with these three agents. And particularly, I'm curious about your experience, because you know we're using this in the adjuvant setting with dabrafenib, trametinib, particularly as it relates to fevers.
So, as Jason said, three of them are very different in terms of their toxicity profile. But dabrafenib and trametinib in the adjuvant setting, pyrexia can be very difficult to manage and is not very tolerable for the patient. The good news is, though, you stop the drugs and it does go away. I find the first fever, when the patient doesn't really know what to expect, might be the most intense and therefore takes the longest to disappear. But once people understand the sort of prodrome just before the fever comes on and they stop the drugs early, just for a short period of time, they tend to be able to get back on the dabrafenib and trametinib after 24, 48 hours. So it's really about patient education and teaching people to feel or understand what that fever is like and to stop the dabrafenib and trametinib early. It is reversible with cessation of the drugs. That is key.
So we'll talk about metastatic disease and then we'll get to adjuvant therapy. Back to you, Georgina, though, in terms of your experience with encobini in terms of tolerability.
In my experience, encobini is the best tolerated of all three different doublets. And I think across the field, we all agree with that. However, with each doublet, it is interesting. There might be a tiny subset of patients that just cannot tolerate one particular doublet and they may tolerate another. So it's not a cross reference. So for example, I have one patient who could tolerate dabrafenib and trametinib by stopping every time the fever came on, but I tried her on encobini and she just could not tolerate it. So it's individualized for the patient. Overall, encobini is the best tolerated drug. And we saw that in the trials. We saw that in the trials in that we could intensify dosing the best with encobini.
So Jason, this is your summary slide in terms of management of metastatic disease in terms of BRAF. And of course, one of the big questions is, you know, what's first line therapy and how does the presence of brain mets affect your choice? Can you kind of just go through kind of your summary of some of the key clinical issues in metastatic disease, Jason?
Sure. Well, and so I think the first point is that BRAF and MEK inhibition is a cornerstone in the management of melanoma. Whether or not it's the frontline therapy cornerstone, I think we can all debate. I think Georgina has done some of the best work trying to delineate which patients are going to benefit the most from therapy, and they're listed here, generally patients with low volume disease, normal LDH, good performance status, and those are the patients in the front line, honestly, who are probably going to get the maximum benefit from BRAF inhibition, and be that subset who are still alive doing very well on drugs, even out maybe even 5 years. You know, with the three different toxicity regimens, that's another consideration, as well as the dosing regimen. And then, you know, this question about combining with PD-1 is something we're going to get to here in just a second. I would just make the comment quickly, though, that I think most people in the field tend to defer towards the use of immunotherapy in the front line. And I think that's partly, the data when we look at it head-to-head, it obviously helps us. But it's also that having BRAF inhibition available so that if things go sideways, you can always get it back on the rails. I think that's also something that's useful to us as we think about how to sequence therapies best for a patient.
So, Mike, we will talk about the idea of triplets, but I am curious, for example, in this case that was sent in through the chat room of the patient is doing really well on ENCO-BINI, but should you now think about cycling in? I don't know that it's even been done in a trial, but Mike, what do you think about that idea and that concept?
Yeah, my view is that if someone is doing well on whatever therapy you started, you keep them on that treatment. You don't change out of a winning horse in the middle of the stream. And so if someone's doing well on it, I would continue, but I would watch very closely for any evidence that the disease is no longer responding. If some lesion is starting to grow or there's a new lesion, then that might be a time when one might switch to an immunotherapy. But we know that there are patients who can stay on BRAF MEK inhibitors for 5 years or more, tolerate it well, and some who may even be able to get off the treatment and do well.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. In fact, you know, for this patient who's now we see you responding at this point, Mike, what's the likelihood that the response is going to continue for 5 years?
So the data is that I think that if you have a complete response, the chances are that about 50 to 70% likelihood that you will be alive at 5 years, and most of those patients will still be responding. However, if you stop treatment, even if you've had a complete response, then somewhere up to half the patients will exhibit disease progression within 6 months to 18 months, depending on what study you're looking at.
So Jason, of course, oncologists, we always like to combine things. And we're starting to see triplet regimens, and I'm curious about your thoughts about Inspire 150, Jason.
Yeah, so obviously we like to combine things, but there actually is a pretty strong preclinical rationale for combining BRAF inhibition with immunotherapy. We see that with the starting of BRAF inhibitor, we actually get a bit of an immune infiltration into the tumor. That was part of the rationale that led to these combinations in addition to them being effective therapies. So this was the first randomized phase 3 clinical trial to combine a triplet. So vemurafenib, cobimetinib, and atezolizumab, and you'll remember that's the PD-L1 antibody, not otherwise approved for melanoma, compared in this trial to the doublet targeted therapy with vemurafenib and cobimetinib. And I think that that's an important point. I don't know if we'll have time to come back to it, but I'm not sure that's the most appropriate comparator arm for standard clinical practice. In any case, the study showed an improvement in progression-free survival for the triplet relative to the doublet. And you can see the p-value there meeting significance. I'll say quite honestly, though, maybe not as impressive as we might have hoped. And so you can see there was an improvement in PFS, but only by a few months. Again, OS also improved with the median there at 28 months or 60% at 2 years. I think these data show that the triplet is useful. The question is how does this data compare with other things that we're doing in the field? And I'll just note for comparison point that the median overall survival for Ipi and Nivo is not reached at 5 years as opposed to 2 years. And so I think that's an important thing to keep in mind when we might think about how we would use these data. I'll also just note quickly, there's another randomized phase 3 called COMBI, which combines dabrafenib, trametinib, and spartalizumab. And we'll be interested to see what those data look like, whether they recapitulate these or look any better. I would have to say that my read on these data is that it would not necessarily influence the use my use of this regimen in the front line. We can get to some of the reasons why, perhaps, if we have time.
So I'm going to go through a couple of clinical scenarios. Georgina, maybe you can respond to these questions. First of all, I'm going to ask the audience, in general, what's your usual therapy, first-line therapy, metastatic BRAF-positive disease in an asymptomatic, clinically stable patient? So we'll just sort of keep that one in mind, Georgina, as we watch the audience vote. And we did a survey of 48 general medical oncologists and community-based practice in the United States, asked them these same questions, and they were pretty split in this situation, Georgina, between BRAF and immune therapy. It looks like the audience is also similarly split to some extent. We're going to ask you, so kind of split between Ipi-Nivo and it looks like Encobeni. Now, audience, we're saying you've got a patient with symptomatic BRAF mutant metastatic disease. How would you think this one through? And we'll just see how they do. And meanwhile, we'll see how the oncologist, now you see a lot more people using BRAF therapy. Actually, not as much Encobeni as I would have thought, but in any event. And then finally, we asked this question in terms of brain mets, and we still see a lot of targeted therapy, but here also a fair amount of Ipi-Nivo. So, Georgina, can you talk a little bit about how you think through first-line therapy, BRAF mutant disease, in these various clinical scenarios?
So in these various clinical scenarios, you did highlight patients were young. But in general, as a general principle for BRAF mutant disease, they tend to be younger patients. We know that V600E is a much higher rate of BRAF mutation in less than 50-year-olds. In fact, in less than 40-year-olds, 80% or 85% of melanoma patients have a BRAF mutation. So it is more emphasized in the young group. I always go with Ipi-Nivo. Why do I do that? If you look at the progression-free survival curves in the first-line setting, they are much higher landmarks and overall survival curves, much higher landmarks as you go out with the years, year two, year three, year four, and year five. In melanoma, we are going for durable responses. We're not going from one treatment to the next, to the next, to the next, and then find people die. That's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is give durable, long-term responses. So BRAF mutant disease, we know, benefits from the addition of CTLA-4 more so than any other subgroup in terms of aberrations. We see higher progression-free survival, higher overall survival landmarks in that BRAF mutant subgroup compared with BRAF plus MEK inhibitors. We have to remember, if we get out to 5 years, we're only seeing about 20% of patients overall who are surviving or progression-free, I should say, whereas this is much higher for the combination of ipilimumab and nivolumab. If they're symptomatic, though, I still go for ipilimumab, nivolumab, unless they've got a very, very poor prognosis and they've really only got weeks to live, then I will start with the BRAF-MEK.
So before we get to a case from Jason, back to you, Georgina. Any comments about the triplet approach?
I agree with Jason and almost all of us in the field is that the comparator arm in that triplet study was not appropriate. The better comparator arm would have been a combination of PD-1 and CTLA-4. The landmarks that we're seeing at 24 months, as Jason pointed out, are not what we had hoped for. And it's about durability, so watch this space. They're not particularly well tolerated. There's a high rate of adverse events with those triplets. And I agree with Jason's summation that I don't think this changes first-line therapy. The time I'd really like to try it, and we haven't got evidence for this, Neil, and this is really important. We should try and do this trial. But let's say we have a BRAF mutant patient who fails combination ipilimumab, nivolumab, or PD-1 plus CTLA-4, what is the role of continuing the PD-1 and adding in the BRAF-MEK? Is that maybe where the triplet will help?
Very interesting, and maybe relevant to this case that Jason has. Let's hear about this 42-year-old man, Jason.
Sure. So 42-year-old patient presented with a nasty-looking lesion on the right leg and we underwent wide local excision, sentinel node with completion dissection because we could palpate a lesion in the groin right away. And so we'll note that completion dissections aren't really standard anymore, but in this case, because we could already feel it, that was done. And the patient had testing that showed a BRAF V600E mutation for all the reasons that Dr. Long actually laid out very well. So the patient went in the adjuvant setting and preferred to get the oral drugs and started dabrafenib and trametinib. It did very well with the treatment, did require one treatment delay due to pyrexia, I think around 6 weeks for treatment. But about a year after stopping the treatment, had recurrence with bone and lung metastases. And so the patient was then treated with nivolumab and ipilimumab, and the patient had resolution of the lung mets, but the bone mets actually progressed, and there were new bone mets that were observed. And so in this case, we started the patient on encorafenib and binimetinib. We don't have long follow-up, but similar to what was raised in the discussion earlier from the community, the patient had a response and is doing well so far, but albeit is less than 6 months into the treatment so far.
So, Mike, any comments about this case?
It's an interesting case. First of all, adjuvant therapy with the BRAF MEK inhibitors, while in some patients you can stop the treatment and it looks like their disease may have been eliminated, even if there was residual disease. But many times after a period of time, the disease is not completely gone and then reappears, but it doesn't mean it's no longer sensitive to targeted therapy. So although it was reasonable to try immune therapy in this patient who recurred after BRAF targeted therapy and go for a long-term durable response, and the patient did get benefit in the lung, but as we often see, some organs have discordant response, and bone is sometimes difficult to produce a response. And so it was reasonable at that point to go back to BRAF MEK inhibition to see whether the disease was still sensitive. And it's possible that it may stay sensitive for a long time. But I think one would also be looking if there's isolated potentially bone metastases at whether there's a role of regional therapy to try to control disease that may not have responded to immune therapy and may not have a durable response to targeted therapy.